What do you think, for you, the link between drug use and offending is?
It's been very strong. You know, initially, I got involved with crime because of poor choices, role models, and just believing that it was sort of okay, I think. But it was only when I came into prison in 1987, in 1990, I got addicted to heroin in prison. It was just a road that's gone on for like decades now.
So I think there's a lot of suggestions in the papers that drug taking affects you particularly in two different ways, in that you offend because you want to get money to buy drugs, but you also then lose your inhibitions and your sense of self-control, and then you turn to violent offending.
I think you're twofold. There's that real desire. You need something to function. You know, you cannot get up and, you know, function if you're a heroin addict. You know, there's that physical, you'll need that fix first thing in the morning, or that something to get you going.
Gerald was previously freed by a parole board panel in 2015. The conditions of his licence included staying at Quinton House Care Hostel. He did well at first, but then relapsed into taking prescription drugs, including codeine. His mobile phone was confiscated after he broke a rule restricting its use. It led to him committing a burglary to get money to buy a new phone.
I was sitting in the garden that morning, and I just seen two uniformed police come up, and I just made the connection they've come for me regarding the burglary that I committed. I've either done something wrong. I knew that I'd done wrong by committing the crime, but I knew I'd done something wrong in the burglary regarding leaving DNA there with a bar that I'd left. I remember that I couldn't find it. And I just put two and two together that they've come for me. And it was just initial panic because I knew exactly what that was going to lead to.
You've done so many courses in prison about consequential thinking, decision-making. Why didn't you employ any of that?
At that time, because things had gone wrong, when it actually came to the police coming there, you know, I didn't think I was going to get, much of a chance. It's been very hard for me to have got to the stage where I've actually got parole, you know, Quinton House, and to be given that chance and then to blur, I just thought it was, you know, game over. So when the police actually just came for me, I just panicked and gone over a back fence.
And then where did you go?
My half-brother, I contacted him and asked him not to tip, but he told me, brother, and I felt so ashamed because yeah. He was expecting a phone call that night, and now he was going to hear what had happened. I'd messed up. I'd gone at large after such a good opportunity.
What did he do?
He was devastated, he was fuming. He tried to talk me into handing myself in. I actually convinced him that I think it was a matter of life and death for me going back to prison. I just think I couldn't handle going back to prison, especially after so soon of just getting out and how hard that was to actually get there. You know, I knew I'd messed up.
But you do eventually hand yourself in, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, why? What changed?
As I said, I nearly committed crimes that I didn't want to commit.
I see. So, and that was when you were thinking about robbing somebody at knife point or using a syringe, presumably to threaten them.
I had a syringe drawn up with my blood in a bag. I was going to Covent Garden. I had a plan maybe of robbing a place, a shop that did watches. And I just felt so disconnected, not a part of life. I felt quite predatory. Looking at Covent Garden, such a beautiful place, beautiful area, people just being normal members of society, and there was me, just this addict looking to steal, you know. And I wanted to be a part of society, you know. And I spotted the watch place, and there was young female members of staff. And I just thought, I can't do this, you know. It's horrible, I just couldn't do it. I knew what to have to do, and it just wasn't in me anymore, you know, to do that.
So did you go to the police station?
And then we went to Toe Puddle Street police station and handed myself in.
How did that feel?
It felt like it was the right thing to do, because I was like, you know, I've actually taken responsibility and doing something really there. It was quite sad at the time. The police didn't even know really that I was on the run. There was a bit of a mix-up or something. And then that was it. I ended up going on remand in Pentonville.
Now, in your the representations from your solicitor, which are written on your behalf, it says that you don't consider yourself to be a violent individual, which arguably is quite a surprising statement given your previous offending, which includes robbing banks and holding people at gunpoint.
There's some of my offences, there was an element of bravado of scaring someone to the point of to get what I wanted. And there's times I took that a little bit to the extreme. But it wasn't a desire to be violent. You know, I don't like violence. I'm quite fearful of myself.
But you were prepared to use it instrumentally?
I have done, yeah, in the past. I've been the victim of violence myself in prison. Been cut, I've been stabbed 36 stitches and stuff like that. I feel very fearful, and that's a big part of me in keeping myself to myself, of the slightest things in prison can lead to altercations. I've seen some terrible things in prison.
I don't have very many questions for you, actually. You've been released before. Things didn't go very well for you. How are you different now?
I think there's a difference in me that I've got older. I've had a really good opportunity. It's nearly killed me coming back to prison. I did take a real serious attempt at taking my own life in Pentonville. I'm thankful that I'm here and I've potentially got another chance. I think there's a lot of support and vested interest in me, and I've got a real desire to sort of embrace that.
Do you expect to face any challenges on release?
Yeah.
What will they be, and how are you going to cope with them?
I think there's going to be, they can come up from anywhere, but again, my safety mechanism is to voice them as soon as they sort of arise.
Give me an example of a challenge.
Intent to steal something, if something, okay. Being dishonest, you know, like, you know, it's hard to survive, but it's been so ingrained in me to steal and take things that don't belong to me.
And what are you going to do?
Things would be overwhelming. Share.
With you?
My key worker, my offending supervisor. You know, I know that it's important, so I think at least have three different avenues of people that I can tap into support at any one time, in case someone isn't there.